You're listening to NPR on Science. I'm David Malikoff, an editor here on NPR Science Desk. This week, I've got three stories for you. One is about some bacteria that eat antibiotics. That's a little strange because those are the drugs that are supposed to kill germs. Another story looks at an effort in California to build plug-in hybrids. Those are cars that you could charge up by simply plugging them into a wall socket. First, we've got a story from our Climate Connection series with National Geographic. We sent Dan Charles, a reporter and editor here on the desk, to the former Soviet Republic of Ukraine. It's a place that has a lot of old factories and heating plants that spew a lot of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And Dan told me that not many of the Ukrainians he met seemed very concerned about climate change. But he did talk to one woman who is very concerned about the issue. She's a former member of parliament who also happens to be Ukraine's biggest pop star.
I'm Ruslana. I'm a singer from Ukraine. Now I present Ukraine in the world with my new project, Wild Energy.
Like a Brazilian soccer star, Ruslana gets by with just one name, and everybody in Ukraine knows it. In her music, you can hear echoes of Ukrainian folk songs, but nobody's going to call Ruslana a folk singer. Her live shows are spectacles with fire, smoke, dancers, and costumes. In the middle of it all, there's Ruslana tossing her hair, stamping her feet, and usually not wearing very much, a small bundle of unbridled energy. That image is why she originally decided to call her new stage show Wild Energy. Yuri Melnik, her international publicity manager, says the words just seem to fit her style.
But it later transcended into something much bigger. The energy of the wind, the energy of the sun, the energy of water.
Renewable energy, energy independence.
Ruslana says she wants to get people thinking about the environmental cost of fossil fuels and the dangers of global climate change, not by lecturing, but with dazzle and a driving beat.
It's very important to show this issue very visually. It has to be presented very well, so teenagers don't just hear it, they really understand that.
So Ruslana doesn't sing about carbon footprints and gas prices. She sings about the wild energy of love. It triumphs over a synthetic world dependent on synthetic energy. In the video version, it's a pale, metallic-looking woman who gets her strength from a giant machine. You may look nice, Ruslana sings, but that synthetic mask isn't really you. Ukraine is not a rich country, but it burns coal and gas as if it were. Ukraine consumes almost as much energy per person as Italy, even though the average Italian is four times richer. Most of Ukraine's energy, especially natural gas, comes from Russia, and every so often, Russia threatens to cut Ukraine off. In fact, that's a big reason why Ruslana got interested in this issue. She's a Ukrainian nationalist. She joined street protests that brought down a government in 2004 and took a seat briefly in Ukraine's parliament. She's pushing for greater independence from Russia, including energy independence.
Ukrainians should know that they are not as dependent on natural gas as they think they are.
But it's really not easy getting young Ukrainians interested in clean, green, homegrown energy.
For young people, they don't care about this, I think.
Roman Lebed is a 21-year-old journalist in Kyiv. His friend Ina Zhelizna is a student. She's 19.
They think about their everyday problems.
Something which is closer for me, like, I don't know, I have to finish my university, so why should I think about some global warming?
All of us know about this problem, but only few are really concerned about it and really think that we should do something.
Even Irina Stavchuk, who works specifically on climate change for one of Ukraine's environmental groups, says she can't really get her generation interested.
They just don't want to listen anything about it. One thing could be it's not interesting. Another thing could be they don't want to be bothered with anything.
They're too busy hanging on as their country continues its wild ride from Soviet Socialist Republic into capitalism. they've seen dramatic changes. And underneath a layer of Slavic melancholy, there's a touch of amazement. Irina Kosovar is an economist with a consulting company.
Yes, it's this life is more competitive, yes, but you have a lot of opportunities, really, a lot of opportunities.
In the capital city of Kiev, wealth seems almost within reach now. It's there on television, billboards, and on the streets, clogged with shiny new cars. In fact, if there's one thing that's the focus of life in the new capitalist Ukraine today, it's...
money.
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 Get some money.
Young people in Ukraine spend a lot of time thinking about how to get money.
Yes. Yes, it's question number one.
Ruslana, though, is trying to persuade young Ukrainians that coal and gas are just as vital as cash.
Energy is like currency, like money. This is how I see it in my project. It's the most valuable currency. And until we realize it, we are going to waste it.
Yet, even Ruslana, for all her energy and celebrity, sounds at times a little unsure that her cause will catch on. To be honest, she says, I'm a little bit afraid of starting a PR campaign about climate change or Ukraine's appetite for fossil fuels. She says she needs more allies and sponsors. She doesn't want to be a lonely voice. Dan Charles, NPR News.
By the way, if you want to see Ruslana in action, and there is a lot of action, you can check out a video at npr.org/climateconnections. Now on to California, where state officials are very concerned about climate change. And as part of their effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, they are pushing plug-in hybrids. That's a car that would use mostly electricity, not gasoline, to move around. You can't buy one yet, but NPR's Kerry Kahn found an engineer who's trying to change that.
Peter Norman says he has a love-hate relationship with cars. As a kid, he loved to tinker with them, but as an adult, he hates what they do to the environment. A few years ago, he started tinkering with the Toyota Prius in his garage in the Southern California suburb of Monrovia.
Actually, it was three guys in two garages in Monrovia.
Out of those garages, Norman's engineering company was born. He and his engineers have converted locomotives to run on rechargeable batteries and are even trying to make a battery-powered 18-wheeler. But their main focus is taking a Prius hybrid, which normally gets just under 50 miles a gallon, and turning it into a plug-in car that runs the majority of the time on electricity. That's all you hear when you turn it on. Norman has removed the manufacturer's battery from the Prius and replaced it with a lithium-ion pack, three times the size. It takes up the whole trunk of the car. Then he drilled a hole in the back fender for the electrical plug. At night, he plugs it into a standard outlet to charge. On a test drive through the tree-lined streets of Monrovia, Norman shows off.
We're in the high-rent district now. We're driving up a pretty steep hill here, and I just wanted to show you we're going all electric here. Up the hill. But if we wanted to, I could push really hard, turn on the gas engine.
Norman steps on the pedal, and for the first time in our tour, the car is running just on gasoline.
It just kicks in. We could drive all electric, and we could have real high performance with the gasoline.
After a 5-mile spin about town, we head back to the warehouse.
On our trip, we just drove 5 miles. We got 340 miles per gallon.
Norman says when you factor in longer commutes with freeway driving, his Prius averages 100 miles per gallon. For now, the conversion cost, more than $10,000 a car, is prohibitive. Norman says that cost would come down with mass production. So what's it worth to California drivers facing $4 a gallon gasoline to get 100 miles a gallon?
Probably $2,000.
Scott Haas has just bought his standard Prius hybrid last month.
As gas goes up, you know, it changes the equation.
So if there's a market for a dependable plug-in hybrid now, and a small California engineering firm can build them, why can't the big automakers produce them? They say they're close, but the technology still isn't ready for prime time. California air regulators disagree, and at a public hearing last month, they ordered 6 major car companies to produce nearly 60,000 plug-ins for the state's consumers by 2014. Engineering professor Peter Sperling sits on the California State Air Resources Board.
What California is doing is taking leadership and telling the car companies they've got to get started now.
The two companies closest to making California's goal, Toyota and GM, say they hope to have prototypes out in a couple of years, but say that meeting the state's goal of 60,000 plug-ins will be a stretch. Carrie Kahn, NPR News.
Now our final story on energy of a different kind, the food that bacteria eat to survive. Nell Greenfield-Boyce, who works with me on the science desk, noticed a paper about bacteria that eat antibiotics. Her interest was piqued because, of course, antibiotics typically kill bacteria. And Nell was even more intrigued to learn that these antibiotic-eating bacteria are as common as dirt. That's where they live. Here's her story.
Gautam Dantas of Harvard Medical School in Boston says he and his colleagues didn't have to travel far to make this scientific discovery.
There's soil everywhere. So we just walked up to, you know, one of the public gardens right outside Fenway Park and took a scoop up of soil.
They took the bacteria from this dirt. Then they put the microbes in a situation where they would not only have to survive in the presence of an antibiotic, the germs would actually have to use the antibiotic as food in order to live. Dantas figured they wouldn't be able to do it and they'd die.
And so we were quite surprised that those couple antibiotics that we tested initially gave large amounts of bacterial growth.
The researchers thought, what's going on? So they went out and got dirt from about a dozen places, like a pristine forest, a farm, a city park. And they did the same test with additional antibiotics, 18 in all.
And in no case did we find an antibiotic that was not eaten by a bacterium.
It turns out that many different soil bacteria, hundreds, could live on an antibiotic diet. What's more, the scientists discovered something else. If a bug could happily eat one antibiotic, it was also likely to survive when exposed to others.
On average, they were resistant to 17 out of the 18 antibiotics at concentrations used in the clinic, which is, I mean, at least in our mind, that was mind-blowing.
Now, this study didn't look at bacteria that cause disease in people. But Dantas is a little troubled by the idea that genes for this kind of drug resistance are just out there in the dirt. Since some soil bacteria are related to human and animal germs, he worries they could pass on their genes for drug resistance.
That transfer into human-relevant pathogens is what we're worried about.
The researchers describe their work in the journal Science. Jerry Wright studies antibiotic resistance at McMaster University in Ontario, Canada. He says when he read this paper, his first thought was that he wished he'd done the experiment.
This study is so cool because it's showing us that there's this population of organisms that we had never even thought about before.
He says scientists previously knew of just a few bugs that could eat up antibiotics.
But it was really thought of as more of a parlor trick.
Now that scientists know that lots of bacteria can do this, Wright says researchers have something new to figure out. Exactly how are these germs able to digest the very thing that's supposed to kill them? Nell Greenfield-Boyce, NPR News.
If you'd like to hear more stories about science or the environment or technology, go to npr.org. For NPR on Science, I'm David Malakoff.